I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey, it's Ryan Reynolds, and I'm here with Keith, co-star of my upcoming film, If, only in theaters May 17th. Do you want to tell people the big news? All right, I'll do it. Sign up now and you'll get unlimited for $15 a month and 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan on us.
MintMobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 equivalent to $15 per month. Unlimited over 40 gigabytes per month. Face lower speeds. Videos at 480p. Active Mint customers by 5/31/24 get 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan. Auto renews after 6 months. Offer ends May 31st, 2024. Separate Paramount Plus registration required. Terms and conditions apply if rated PG.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
This podcast is brought to you by Kempower, the reliable, quick, and scalable EV charging solutions for everyone and everywhere. And StarCharge, the largest EV charging manufacturer in the world, and is also a provider of residential and commercial battery storage. Hello, everyone. How is it going? You join me in our little corner of the internet over here on the Out of Spec podcast. Thank you for tuning in today. I'm joined by the one and only Jason Goldfarb, an EV infrastructure attorney who's helping to navigate the complicated world of EV charging deployment and contracts through his knowledge of the law. Thank you so much, Jason, for coming onto the podcast today. I'm so happy to have you here.
Yes, same here. I'm very excited. Thank you very much for having me. This is going to be fun.
Really fun. Both I and our listeners are going to get a lesson in the law on this episode. And today we're going to be doing our best, you and I, Jason, with your experience and your unique perspective of this issue to answer the question of why are there so many faulty, broken, or just generally crappy public EV chargers in the US and how we might fix it moving forward. And Jason, right. I'd like to start off by saying, I know that there's general counsel and attorneys that will navigate real estate and contracts, sure, but I didn't know that there are EV infrastructure attorneys. How did you get into this side of the law?
Right. So yeah, definitely what I'm doing is something quite unique. My experience really before I got into the whole EV infrastructure side of things was really on what you would call regular real estate infrastructure and regular real estate infrastructure assets. So I have about 25 years of experience in that industry, and I started out in the wireless telecom business. So wireless telecommunications, when you talk about things like cell phone towers and rooftop installations and things like that, but besides that, not only in the wireless side of things, but also other types of infrastructure assets like outdoor advertising, solar, wind, all of those things go on a piece of property. The best way that I can give an example of like why real estate infrastructure matters, my favorite example is think about your cell phone that you use, right? And the amazing piece of technology that thing is, right? And right. But without the underlying real estate, the wireless telecommunications business could not exist. Can't go anywhere, right? Like you need a place to put the towers, you need a place to put the fiber lines, you need a place to put the rooftop installations, right? So there's a whole niche side of real estate infrastructure that I've been involved in now for the last 25 years or so. And, you know, I have what I think is a pretty unique perspective in the sense that I've worked on it literally for action. So I've worked for two of the largest wireless companies in the country where I was responsible for managing their wireless real estate assets in the New York City metro and northern New Jersey areas. So thousands of cell sites. So if you think of like your typical property manager, this is not like a typical property manager. It's not like with people living in it. It's not commercial real estate. It's a very specialized type of real estate, but I was responsible for managing thousands of locations. I've also done leasing for those locations. I've done amendments for those locations. I've also worked with site acquisition teams that will go out to find new locations or to upgrade those assets. So there's a lot of, I'm going to put on my lawyer hat for a second, but there's a lot of due diligence work, which essentially means doing your homework. And we can talk about that because I've seen problems with people not doing their homework that could be responsible for some of the crappy chargers. So there's a tremendous amount of that work that's done. And then I've also worked for companies that have invested in those assets so that they've purchased real estate infrastructure assets. So I have built them, managed them, bought them, sold them, leased them, negotiated those contracts. So like I've really looked at everything from 360 degrees. So, you know, in terms of my practice and the people that I'm working with, I can just as easily take a look at an infrastructure contract that's been presented to a property owner and figure out how to negotiate that, right, and how to mark that up. But at the same time, if my client was the infrastructure company, I'm sure you can imagine I would probably mark it up and have some different commentary, right, in terms of like mm-hmm. what would be best, you know, for them and how to negotiate. And so that also puts me in a unique position because one of the things that we try to do often as lawyers is put yourself in the shoes of the people on the other side. But I have literally been on every side. So I know exactly what everybody is thinking on both ends and how far you can push and what you can ask for and what you can get away with and what you can't get away with. And so getting into the whole, and this is sort of like a long-winded answer of how I got into the whole thing with EV infrastructure, is that there are so many parallels to the EV infrastructure business right now that I can say that I've seen over the course of, you know, my 25 years in the regular infrastructure industry, and particularly with the wireless telecommunications industry. And as the wireless telecom side of my practice kind of like started to slow down, I had to figure out, okay, I got to make some donuts, right? Like, how's another way that like I can do this? So I've always been into cars, as you can tell by, you know, the stuff in the background here. I've always been into technology. As a lawyer, I've always been really focused on the transactional side of things and trying to put deals together and make business work for my clients and for everybody on, you know, on either side. And it's sort of like a natural way to, you know, to get into this business. It's kind of like the Wild West right now. It's similar to the way that the wireless industry was like, you know, 25 years ago. Everybody's sort of figuring out how to do this. We're making a lot of mistakes along the way. Right now, your cell phone, to go back to that example, is a pretty reliable piece of technology. It works. Doesn't matter what network you're on, right? Battery life is good. You can literally have a conversation or a video call with somebody across the world, and it just works all the time. I mean, you know, for the most part, right? Yeah. And I feel like we're going to get there eventually with the EV ecosystem. It's just going to take some time, but you know, it's a little bumpy. And I guess we're going to talk about some of the bumps.
Definitely. And I agree. Like, I think we're going to get there, but I also think it's important to study history and figure out how we got to where we are, which is what I'm excited to dive into today. And so into that question of the public infrastructure, right. It's hard to maybe get an exact number of how many chargers are down right now. But one way to quantify it, I thought, for our audience is looking at the magnitude that the federal government's financial aid is mm-hmm. investing into repair or replacement right. efforts that for chargers that are temporarily unavailable. So just at mm-hmm. the beginning of this year, they had announced new investment, $325 million across three programs to, quote unquote, increase the reliability and resilience of publicly accessible chargers. And right. this part of this is $149 million in grants dedicated to repair or replace non-operational EV chargers with the goal of putting right. 4,500 back onto online. And then I was looking, and according to the U.S. Department of Energy, we have about 160,000 plus EVSE ports. So that's about 3% to get back online, 4,500. Mm-hmm. So obviously There's a history of broken chargers. The federal government knows it. States know it. CPOs know it. Site hosts know it. And I think we can fix it. But the question is how. So Jason, maybe we can start with what you see as you have this 360 perspective. What have you seen as the root causes of this issue?
Right. Okay. So I think there's no one root cause for why we have this problem. I think it's sort of like a multifaceted problem. And I definitely have some ideas about some ways that we might be able to go about fixing it. Although I think until they change the rules of the, of let's say the new legislation to fix the broken chargers, I don't know that we're going to get it fixed, but I'll explain why in a minute. So I think part of the reason why you have the problem to begin with is that at the beginning, there was this massive push just to get the EV infrastructure in the ground, right? People have used this term before. I'm not the first person to come up with it, but you basically had a land grab, right? Everybody was looking for those federal dollars and they went and they got it. And they put the EV charging down in the ground, pretty much anywhere where they could find a place to put it. I think in a lot of instances, what happened is that nobody actually thought about where they were putting it. Does it make sense to put it here? Is there an actual need to put it here? Is there a customer base that will use it here? How is maintenance and uptime going to work? Who's going to be responsible for all of that? So like, I can give you a couple of really bad examples that like help to like illustrate the problem, right? So I've seen, and probably other people have seen this, right, where you have an EV charger located literally in the middle of nowhere, okay, on an empty roadway, nothing around you, but, you know, mountains and scenery, but there's an EV charger somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that does not make sense, right? Mm-mm. Because it's not near a neighborhood. It's not near a bedroom community where most people actually do have EVs, right? It's just literally in the middle of nowhere. So somebody probably got the funding. They got the money for it. An EV charging company got some funding. They got the incentives. They put it down. Boom, they were done, right?
Yeah.
And because the incentives were tied to the deployment and nothing else, once you got paid, you got paid. So here's how that horrible example plays out, right? You put a charger down in the middle of nowhere where nobody uses it. So if nobody uses it, and nobody's paying any attention to it, what will eventually happen? Somebody just might vandalize it, or it'll break, or somebody will come by and use it and bang into it. But again, since really nobody else is using it, nobody's going to notice that it's broken, right? So now it's been vandalized, now it's broken, and now what do you have? Again, no one's paying attention. The company that put it in doesn't have an obligation for uptime or maintenance and upkeep, right? It's in the middle of nowhere. Just remember that it's not being utilized, which means if it's not being utilized, nobody's making money. So if you're an infrastructure company, are you going to put money into an asset that you are not obligated to put money into if you are not making any money from that asset? And the answer to that question is absolutely not. Why would you? You've already been paid. And if you invest more money to fix it, you won't get any return on your investment in fixing it. So that's kind of like the extreme example. But then you also have other examples of that, of, let's say, the wrong type of infrastructure being put in a place where it kind of makes sense, but you put the wrong infrastructure in for the same thing. My favorite example of this, and I think you and I spoke about this the first time that we had a chance to chat, okay, is, and I won't say where, but let's say you have rideshare pickup lines in an airport.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And you would think that makes sense. Like, a lot of people in the rideshare business, okay, are driving around EVs, right?
Mm-hmm.
You could talk about Hertz and Tesla. Again, you know how my brain goes, but that's a whole other topic of conversation. But all right, a lot of people in the rideshare business are using EVs. And you would think, okay, well, actually it makes sense to have a charging station where EV drivers, right, and where rideshare drivers are doing their pickups. Until you realize,
definitely,
you've had this experience, so have I. Anybody that travels for work or for business or for vacation, and you go to a ride, right? You order a ride share to pick you up to take you somewhere. If you're not there, how long does the car sit and wait for you? Approximately 5 minutes?
Yeah, not a long time.
5 minutes. Not a long time. Okay. So let's talk for a second, level two chargers, right? All right. Level two chargers take a couple of hours to get you to an 80% charge. All right. They're great for, like, in your house, They're great for parking lots, for shopping malls, like for places mm-hmm. where you're going to leave your car for a couple of hours, right? Mm-hmm. But I saw an airport where they put level two chargers in the rideshare pickup line. That makes absolutely no sense. So it's the same kind of problem, right? Somebody got paid money to put EV charging infrastructure in. They put it in. Literally nobody will use it. No one will use it because the only people that can come into the rideshare pickup line are the rideshare people, and they're not allowed to sit for more than 5 minutes. So who else is coming to use those chargers? Nobody. Okay. So that in a situation like that, okay, they're probably, people are going to be seeing what's going on. They're probably not going to be vandalized. It'll probably basically be maintained. But again, the company that put that, like, no one's making money from that except for the person that got the check for the deployment. Okay. So that's part of that problem. Then you have the other issues where we don't have a standard in terms of software, or you don't have a standard in terms of payment processing. I think, you know, you can maybe put this in the show notes, but one of my favorite articles on like why this was a problem, there was an article in the Wall Street Journal, okay, about the situation with chargers in California, okay, and why it was so bad. And in California, by the way, which is like the best place in the country for EV charging, right? And I think it was Joanna Stern wrote the article, okay? Shout out to her. I love her columns, okay? And she wrote this article about how difficult it was like to actually get an EV charged up in Los Angeles, of all places. And the experience that she had with broken cables and broken chargers and chargers not being fixed and payment processing working in one place, not in the other. You have to use five different apps depending upon who's like, it's a mess.
Yeah, it is a mess.
It's a mess.
It really is. And I think this is a really, it's something that we've been talking about lately too, is like, you can't just deploy and expect utilization. And I think, you know, big charge point operators, big companies that are putting these out have to really have very good processes to see what is the utilization in this site area. If we were to put a site in, because we have to make money on it. So it makes want to ask you about, you know, the land grabs that you mentioned, you know, like there were federal dollars to take advantage of. Right. And of course, some people are just 100% of the time, we don't need federal investments. Some people are like, federal investments are amazing. I think it's somewhere in between. Of course, it depends. But here, would you say that obviously, that didn't seem to really go the right way. There weren't enough regulations and, you know, obligations for taking that money and getting those federal dollars. So what about, have you seen with NEVI now? Because this is a whole new effort. Have you seen, what do you think about NEVI in general? Maybe I'll ask.
Okay. So actually, one of the things, I'm going to kind of answer that question, but I want to touch on something which I think, because we got off on a tangent, I didn't totally answer, but you had asked about the new funding to fix the broken chargers, right?
Yes.
So here's where I think that that's somewhat problematic. And it kind of answers the same question, right? So we're taking now, let's say, another $150 or $300 million, and then we're now throwing them at all these broken chargers, right? Mm-hmm. But we're throwing that money at chargers that we probably shouldn't have deployed in some of these places to start with. That's problem number one. Now, the second problem that I see with this is that, at least from what I've read and what I've seen in terms of the new legislation, there is at least a requirement for 97% uptime, okay? Mm-hmm. And also a requirement for 5 years worth of maintenance. Now, on the surface of that, that sounds wonderful until you dig a little bit deeper and then you realize that there's no standard metric that they're using to determine what determines 97% uptime, okay? And there's no incentivized accountability, okay, for the requirement of 5 years worth of maintenance. They could have just as easily said 100% uptime and 15 years worth of maintenance. And I don't think it's going to make a difference, because here's the problem. If they go out and they take the money to fix a broken charger, now it's not up 97%. First of all, you have to first figure out that it's not up 97% of the time and have a metric to see to determine that. But let's just assume that you can determine that some way, even though I don't know how you would do that. But let's for argument's sake that there is. Okay, great. Now what? What's your enforcement mechanism if it isn't? Like, where's the negative consequence for the company for its failure to maintain that 97%? Like, what happens to them? So like in a typical contract, right? The easiest example is you're supposed to pay somebody rent. You pay $100 a month in rent, and it's due on the first of the month. You don't pay on the first, what happens? Okay, landlord sends you a notice. You have to pay your rent. The contract says, okay, well, if you don't pay rent, we give you 10 days to pay it. Then if you don't pay it in 10 days, now what happens? Now you're in default, right? And now once you're in default and you haven't paid rent, and now we, let's say we've given you another notice reminding you, hey, by the way, you didn't pay on the first, we gave you a notice. Now you didn't pay on the 10th, we gave you a notice. Now what do? We terminate your contract. That's a oversimplified example, okay? Yes. But there's some sort of negative consequence to your bad behavior, right? And if you don't build that into a contract, right, then what you end up getting is you don't get accountability, but you get unaccountability. Why should they be accountable? What's the difference? So they have to provide maintenance for 5 years. How are they going to demonstrate that they've been providing maintenance for 5 years? What if they don't? What happens if that? So like, there's none of that. It's kind of like, you know, I don't know what the example would be, but like, there's no teeth to it, right? Like, so it sounds great on the surface, but not, it's not going to do much. Right.
Yeah. Then it sounds like it comes down to the states more. I was speaking to the team at Ohio who launched one of the first NEVI or the first NEVI funded site in the U.S. Right. And how, of course, you know, they get the funding from the federal government, but then they have their own NEVI plans and their own, you know, rules and obligations for if they're partnering with someone to put in the infrastructure that they're going to have to meet. So do you think it's kind of like the federal government said, OK, here's the lump sum, do with it as you will, state, and hold them accountable?
Yeah, I think that would be a very negative way of looking at it. I think their intentions were good. I just don't think that they kind of took it to like to the next level, right? Of actually like taking that step and like thinking about it. Like, you know, I think a way to solve this problem is that like if you want to hand out more money for this process, if you tie it to metrics, like metrics that you can actually quantify that make sense of utilization. Metrics of uptime, metrics of upkeep, maintenance requirements that have some teeth to it. And then you get the money after you've demonstrated that you're doing all of that. It changes the entire game. So instead of just taking a charger, okay, and putting it in the middle of nowhere, like my first example, if you're looking to get the federal funding, you're actually going to be thinking pretty carefully about where you're going to put it, because you're going to want to put it somewhere where it's being used, where you know that you're going to make money from it, where you know you have an incentive to keep it running and well maintained, okay? And that's going to completely change your mindset about the way in which you put the asset down to start with. So that brings up another thing, which is there's actually I didn't intend this, but I think it's a good segue into this, okay? So in the wireless telecommunications business, if I had a dollar, okay, for every person that ever came to me and said, I have the greatest building. How do I get fill in the blank of, you know, the various wireless company to put a, you know, to put a tower on my property? The answer is you don't. It doesn't matter how good your building is. It doesn't matter where you're located. It's irrelevant. Nobody's looking at that list. No one cares. No one's calling you. They're not coming to put a tower down on your property. But what will happen, okay, because the wireless companies know where their customers are. They know where their data needs are. They know where they're making their phone calls. They know where they travel to, where they go from, and so on and so forth. So they have the data and they have the analytics and they know exactly where their customers are located. And they also know where they do have towers. And then they can figure out, oh, our data needs in this particular area are exceeding what our tower is able to handle that's closest. Now we need to go find a location in that little circle where we're now going to put another one, okay? And then they send out a team of site acquisition people, okay, that go to that circle. They call it a search ring, okay? And then they figure out who owns all the property in that area. They start talking to all the property owners. They start sending out contracts. They do a little bit of feelers. They might be negotiating with three or four people at the same time. They might discover that the people in that neighborhood, the landlords are out of their minds, and it's not worth going there, so they'll go somewhere else, okay? Or they'll do a little bit of due diligence, which is something we should talk about. And then they discover that, okay, well, we have this landlord, he's really interested, but it turns out that the guy that we've been talking to doesn't actually own the property, right? Or the property is zoned for something else. Or somebody, let's say, has for the same thing and another company already has the rights to use it, we can't put it there, right? So they do a little bit of homework, they do a little bit of due diligence, and then they figure out where to go. So that brings up the company everybody loves to hate, but let's talk about Tesla for a minute, right? Tesla seems to have it figured out. How do they have it figured out, right? Their infrastructure works. It's mm-hmm. reliable, right? Mm-hmm. Everybody knows what they look like. The marketing mm-hmm. is genius, right? You see Tesla, you see the row of superchargers. How does Tesla figure out where to put all their stuff? I think it's actually pretty simple. I'm not getting this from anybody on the inside. I'm only looking at this from my perspective and having been in this infrastructure business for so long, right? But mm-hmm. they have the data and they have the analytics. They know everything about their drivers. They know everything about their customers. They know where you live. They know where you go to. They know how often you go there. They know how far you travel, okay? They know how long you sit in a particular place. Like, they can slice and dice the data in every which way that you can possibly think of. And then based on that, now they know where they're going to need to put chargers, okay? And then they do something which is even more brilliant, okay? They actually have, like, on their website, they have a place where you can go and you can put your property information in. That made me think of all these people over the last 25 years that have been coming to me and saying, hey, can you get my list of buildings over, you know, to AT&T and have them look at my buildings, right? Mm. People are gladly providing them with their addresses and with their property information. Like,
yeah.
I don't know what the numbers are, but it's got to be a lot, right? Mm-hmm. So they might be hiring site acquisition companies. They might not. But like, if people are willingly putting their information in, telling Tesla, hey, we're open to the possibility, we're interested in having you put your stuff here. So now they know when they need to go in a particular neighborhood or a particular place, they already have a whole list of all the people in the neighborhood that might be interested. Now, mind mm-hmm. you, they may have to do some extra due diligence and make sure they're contracting with the right people and so on and so forth. Okay, we could be talking about their contracts, which is a whole separate conversation, but then they know where to put their equipment. So they kind of have it figured out, like, to a science in terms of where it needs to go. For everybody mm-hmm. else that's trying to do this, you don't have that. You don't already have Teslas on the road. You don't have the data. You don't have the analytics, right? There are services and there are companies out there that are trying to fill that need, right? Where they are helping people figure this stuff out because a lot of that data is publicly available. Now, Tesla's data is way better than the stuff that might be available to the public because it's their ecosystem, right? It's like Apple knowing more about you than anyone, right? Exactly, right? So it's that same kind of thing. And because of that, I think that's also why, for example, last year, I believe Tesla sold something like 600,000 cars last year. And the number two EV manufacturer in the United States behind them, I believe, is the Hyundai Kia Group. And they sold like a little under 100,000. Like, that's a massive difference, right?
Massive,
okay? And it's going to be very hard for anybody really to catch up to that. But part of mm-hmm. that is that they've kind of done like the chicken and the egg, sort of not exactly at the same time, but close enough.
It's true. So
where it's like it's humming along, mm-hmm. where that's starting to happen, okay? The other thing also is why I think you have a little bit of a problem, okay? And then we can stop if you want to talk about another topic. I'm happy to do that. But let's talk about the due diligence piece for this for a minute, okay? So this is something that just came up within the last week or two. As you know, I've been very active, you know, online and on LinkedIn. I'm not shy about my opinions, right? You're getting that from me here, and you've seen that. I know you've seen that firsthand, okay? But so somebody had put up a post about an EV infrastructure company that put down charges somewhere. I think it was somewhere maybe in Georgia. And the post was all about the fact that after they put the charges down, their next door neighbor decided that they didn't really like them very much. I don't know like what the exact circumstances were, but for whatever reason, they didn't like the EV charging, okay? And then so they decided that they were gonna block off their property so either that they couldn't see it, wouldn't have anything to do with it, or whatever it was, okay? And so, interestingly, what do you think happened once they put up their fence? You know the answer to this already. Nobody can now get to the chargers.
Of course.
You wonder, like, well, how did that happen? Because didn't the EV charging company put them down in a place where people could get access to the
public chargers? Public access.
Of course. They had access. had constructive access, whatever. I don't want to get into legal terms. But let's say there was practical access. Okay. Cars could come. Okay. But what they didn't do is they did not do a title search. Okay. And they did not conduct a survey. Now, I can tell you that from my time in the infrastructure business, you do not ever, okay, put down an infrastructure asset on a piece of property without doing your due diligence, without doing your homework, right? When you don't do your homework, right, if you get into trouble for it, there's a consequence. You're going to do your homework. If you're the kind of kid that never does their homework and you never get into trouble, so why should you bother doing your homework, right? Like that's sure. It's like the same kind of thing, like, you know, with my kids, like, you know, like, yeah, there's going to be a consequence if you don't do it. You're not going to do well on the test. You're going to get a bad grade, whatever the case may be. So, but in this case, they didn't do that. Okay. So by not doing that, they did not discover that legally they were landlocked. So it's pretty easy to like kind of just imagine in your head, you know, three squares, you know, on a thing, and you're the square on the bottom right, but the one on your left and on your right around it completely lock in your piece down over here. Okay. So mm-hmm. now, even though, yeah, sure, cars can drive across, no problem. But now once there's a fence up, you can't do anything about it, right? So if you had also just looked, let's say, at a title report or looked at a legal description, your eyes would glaze over. Okay. I've looked at more legal descriptions than I care to admit. Okay. Your eyes glaze over because it's a bunch of verbiage, you know, about, you know, degrees and distances. You can't make any sense of it, right? But a surveyor will take that and they turn it into something visual, right? And now you see a survey. Or you go online and you actually look at, let's say, an online database that's available by the state or the county. Those things are available in many instances. And you mm-hmm. can see the layout of the property. And if you had done that, you might have actually discovered that there were two other squares around you owned by two other people, that the only way to get the property was to cross those one of those other pieces of property, okay? And so you had no legal access. So what mm-hmm. would be your next step in that instance? You would then approach, let's say, the adjoining property owner and say, hey, can we get an easement for access here? Now, the adjoining property owner might say, sure, pay me some obscene amount of money. Or they could have said, no, go pound sand. No, just no. All right. Yep. And so at that point, right, the EV infrastructure company would have been in a position to, let's say, now make an informed decision, right? There's a little bit yes. of risk, right? You imagine they're going to know, like, what is their risk appetite? And then they could have decided, okay, so we think it's worth the risk and we're still going to build here because we think for whatever reason that they'll never do this. Okay. But if they do, at least we're prepared. Or they say, no, this guy's a lunatic. He wants $1 million, you know, for, you know, an access easement across the property that he's never used, that he's never going to use. Okay. And his heirs will never use. Okay. But he's a lunatic. So guess what? We're not going to put the chargers here. Let's look into putting it across the street. Now, right. Instead, they spent probably 18 months. I'm just guessing. I don't know the exact, right? But the example is instructive. Let's say they spent 18 months of time. They did all sorts of development work. They spent a small fortune, right, in the equipment and making sure the power is there and all this other stuff, advertising the location, having people come to them, only to have the neighbor put up a fence and you got nothing. And there's
yeah, all that effort wasted.
There is yeah. literally nothing you can do because you were, I'm going to say it, you were an idiot to put it there without doing your due diligence to determine whether or not that made sense. Now, I can tell you that like in the cell phone business and in the regular infrastructure business, whether it's advertising or anything else or a wind turbine, like you're not putting that stuff down. Unless you've done a title search, unless you've had a surveyor come out there and take a look at it. And by the way, even on a, like a stupid, simple level, okay, let's say you decide you pick what you think's a great location and you enter into a contract with John Doe for the property because, you know, John Doe is the guy that owns the piece of property, right? But what you didn't know is that John Doe created a limited liability company that the property is owned by. And technically, the property is really owned by the limited liability company. Now, John Doe might be the person behind the limited liability company, but guess what happens when John Doe signs your contract? It's not worth
it. Doesn't mean anything.
It's printed on because owner of the property. And then when you have a problem, now what do you have? You have nothing because you didn't even, like, you didn't even enter into a contract with the person that owns the property. Oh, well, how is it exactly that you put your infrastructure here? Really? You have permission of the limited liability company to put that stuff there? How did that happen? Okay. So that then gets you into, like, so just by not doing things like that. So again, I think because there was this like manic focus on like, just get it out there, get it out there. I think in a lot of instances, corners were cut. But I think even on a, let's just say that that's not the reason why people were doing it. But I think also part of the problem is that people are not looking at EV charging infrastructure as a real estate infrastructure asset. Okay. It goes back to that whole thing I said about the cell phone, right? Your mm-hmm. cell phone, the wire, it can't exist without the underlying real estate. The publicly available EV infrastructure ecosystem can't either. Okay. And if you're putting something down on a piece of real estate, you darn well better know that you have the right to put it there, that you have the right to keep it there. Okay. As a property owner, you also want to know the reverse of that too. You want to know who's responsible for maintenance. You want to know who's responsible for upkeep. Okay. I'll give you another example. Okay. If I'm going too far and you need to ask other questions, really interrupt me. I'm serious because I can okay. just go.
I'm enjoying okay. the different examples. Yeah.
Okay. I'm going to give you another example because I think like real world examples, I think really drive home the point of why we're having so many issues. So I'll give you another one. So I was involved in another conversation where people were talking about EV charging at hotels. Okay. Hotels, you would think, are like actually a great place for EV charging. It's probably a great place, particularly for level two charging, right? People are coming, they're staying overnight. A lot of people are being given EVs as rentals, right? People go on vacations, they take them, they stay overnight. They leave their car there for the day, especially at a resort, right? There are people who can move the cars and whatever it is, okay? You would think it's a good place to do it, right? So I saw this discussion where there was a problem at a particular hotel. Okay, the chargers are not working. So the person that has the car is going to the hotel. Hey, this charger doesn't work. The hotel staff has no idea how to deal with it. Not only do they not know how to deal with it, when they call the charging company, nobody deals with it. The person who's there is trying to now deal with it on their own. And so now what do you get? Now you get annoyed hotel staff, mm-hmm. right? You get annoyed guests, mm-hmm. okay? You get damage to the reputation of the hotel because your guest is thinking, what kind of crappy place is this where nothing works, okay? Leaving aside the fact that, you know, the pool's been great, the mini bar's been great, all the other stuff, but they're not going to remember that. They're going to remember when they needed to charge up their car to go visit their relatives, they couldn't do it because the darn thing didn't work and none of the hotel could help them. Nobody from the charging company came. And by the way, do you think those people are going to remember it was charging company A who had the crappy chargers? Of course they did, right? And if they can avoid using that charger somewhere else the next time they're on the road, do you think they'll pick a competitor? Of course they will, right? So it hurts everybody, right? And so I threw out, well, what's in the contract? Who's responsible? And the answer is, well, no one knows, right?
No one knows.
Like you can't have that, right? You need to know who's responsible. Now, take it a step further, okay? If you're driving by a piece of property, okay, and let's leave EV charging completely out of it, and you have two strip malls, okay? Strip mall A, strip mall B. Strip mall B is beautiful. There's lots of cars in the parking lot. It's well-maintained. It's modern. It's palm trees. It's beautiful lighting. Lots of parking spots, right? There's all sorts of amenities. There are fountains going, right? Happy, smiling people going in and out. Like,
lovely.
Okay, let's go number B, like strip mall B. Strip mall B is run down. There's garbage in the parking lot. Okay, you know where this is going, right? There are broken windows, right? The place looks like it hasn't been updated since the 1950s, okay? There's one shop, you know, that looks like it's barely running, but it looks a little bit sketchy, okay? And so, where are you going to go? I think the answer is obvious. You know where you're going. You're going to the place with the palm trees and the fountains. Like, that's not Certainly. Even a question, right? So when people are driving EVs, right, and they come to a place where everything is nice and pretty and beautiful and they know it's going to work, by, now they've driven by, you know, the third EV charger that maybe, if you're lucky, now has a sign on it saying out of order. And it's been that way for months, right? They're driving by. They know they're not going to any more of the chargers from that company, but they're going to go right down the block. And I'm not even going to say where they're going to go, but you know where they're going to go, right? Okay. So that's why you have that problem also, right? And I think a lot of times what's missing in a lot of these contracts is who's responsible for all of that stuff. Like, the property owner doesn't want to be responsible. Like, they want to be responsible for maintaining their property, right?
Mm-hmm.
And they want to know, especially when your pitch is, and you know who I'm talking about, we'll bring more business to your property if you put our chargers here, right? That's how you're going to see your ROI. Like,
mm-hmm.
we're not going to pay your rent, but we're going to bring more people in, okay?
Right.
And so, like, if that's the pitch, okay, that's great. And, oh, and by the way, we'll do, another company might say, we'll do a little bit of a revenue share. Okay, well, that's great too. But if your charges aren't working, what revenue are you sharing with me? There's nothing to share, right?
Mm-mm.
And I, as the property owner, I'm in the business of strip malls. I'm not in the business of EV charging and real estate infrastructure. I don't know anything about it. All mm-hmm. I know is that you came here, you want to put it here, you're telling me you want to share money with me, and when the damn thing breaks and I call you, or when the customers call you, nobody comes to fix it. Now, now what does that do? That makes my strip mall look like the example of the sketchy place, okay? Mm-hmm. But where the chargers are working and everybody's lined up and everything is working perfectly and the fountains are going and everybody's smiling and happy, they go there. And so what happened to your pitch about bringing me customers? Where's your pitch about my improvement to my ROI? Like, where did that go?
You've abandoned it.
It goes poof, right? Or because nobody puts stuff into a contract to obligate somebody to take care of it. So in the example of the hotel, you know, if there would have been clear directions, right, of how to deal with this, if the staff had simply been trained, here's the number you have to call. If there was an obligation on the part of the infrastructure company that if you get one of these calls from the staff, you are obligated to come out and make a repair in X amount of time. If there are certain parts and things that, you know, frequently, let's say, like break, okay, that can be easily fixed without bringing out, you know, electrician or something like that, okay? And they provided spares and they provided some basic training, right? From what I understand, like, every one of the more common things that breaks are the actual charging receptacles or the plugs. Okay. But like, if you have those, or, you know, or if those things can easily be fixed, let's say by the electrician on staff, perhaps, okay, with a little bit of training, so that way you don't have to wait, or you don't have to wait weeks for a part, because common parts and things that break, the hotel already has a spare, right? But again, if those things aren't put into a contract,
it's not gonna happen.
It's not gonna happen. I'll give you one more contract example, okay? So my kids live in a building, my daughter and son-in-law and my granddaughter, they live in a building where they have EV charging in the building for some of the tenants, okay?
Nice.
Which is great. You would think it's awesome, right? However, my kids have told me that the building chat is on fire, okay? Why? Because people are complaining about the EV charging. Two out of the five don't work. The other three that do work, people hog.
Yeah.
They intentionally do super slow charging because they don't want to pay the rates for faster charging. Mm-hmm. Okay. They tend to park, you know, overnight and then leave their car there during the day when they take public transportation to get to work. Right. Now somebody mm-hmm. else needs to get there. Nobody has the keys to move the car. You know where this is going. It doesn't go anywhere good. And why doesn't it go anywhere good? Okay. I haven't seen the rules and regs at the building. Okay. And I have not seen the contract from the EV charging company. I don't even know which company it is. And if I did, I wouldn't tell you anyway. But like, I don't know, okay? Mm-hmm. But I'm guessing that the building doesn't have any rules as to how this is supposed to work. Maybe they do have rules as to how this is supposed to work, but it goes back to incentivizing the accountability. If they don't enforce the rules, they're kind of worthless. And if you people know you don't enforce the rules, nobody will follow the rules. Okay.
Right.
And it's possible that they have a problem with the company that's chosen to give them the infrastructure because there's no obligation to provide maintenance and upkeep. And if there is, It doesn't have any teeth to it if they don't do it within the time frame that they said that they would, right? Mm-hmm. So like that's all contractual based, right? Those are all things that could be done that could really make a difference. So let's take that same scenario and let's put into a situation where the building has very distinct rules about how this is supposed to work, right? Mm-hmm. When you can and when you cannot charge. And if you do, you must remove your car when it's done, no matter what time that is. And if you don't, we either hit you with a penalty. Now, by the way, mm-hmm. penalty sometimes does not work because somebody might make the decision to say, well, it's worth it for $50 for me to just leave the car. So I'll pay the $50, right? You don't want to be like, if you tell people and you tell tenants, we're going to tow you, mm-hmm. and you don't have your car. And on top of that, you're going to have to pay the towing bill. That's kind yeah. of like an incentive to go down there at 1 a.m. and move your darn car, okay? And then in addition to that, the company that's providing the infrastructure, there are all sorts of interesting and unique technological ways that you can solve some of those problems, right? There is mm-hmm. software to help you figure out ideal times to charge, ideal times of when to do this so that it costs you the least amount of money. Software that will remind you, hey, it's time for you to move because car B now needs to come in. And if you don't move, we're going to ding you. And now we're going to charge you, or the building will mm-hmm. charge. Like, there's all sorts of stuff to do that. There's hardware that you can use to fix that. I'll give you one other example. Okay. Somebody told me that a friend of theirs just moved into a building. They limit EV charging to 2 hours. Based on what? Now they said, oh, they have an HOA. I said, okay, as a lawyer, I'm somewhat skeptical, right? HOAs are not always rational, right? Everybody can think of all sorts of crazy things, right, that HOAs do. It always makes me think of like Seinfeld when he went to go visit, you know, his parents, you know, down in Florida, the insanity, mm-hmm. you know, that ensues there, okay? Can help with bringing the Seinfeld reference. But they have crazy rules sometimes. It could be that the rule is completely arbitrary. It could be that the rule is made up by somebody that knows nothing about EVs. It could be they were given no guidance by the EV charging company. They got no guidance from the power company as to how it works. It could simply be a matter of that the building does not have the capacity, okay?
Right.
The physical power capacity to deal with people charging up for more than 2 hours, because what's their first priority? Your computer, your hair dryer, yeah. right? Your television, your totally. Washing machine, your dryer. Like, they need to be able to do that. And by the way, mm-hmm. goes back to there being, you know, technological things that you can do to solve power management. But again, like, if you don't do those things, you're going to have problems. So I know we keep talking about all these things that can cause problems, but there's so many different things that can cause problems. But there are ways to fix them all. It takes a little bit of education. People have to like mm-hmm. really learn and understand, right? You got to like dive into it. Like, well, why did the building say only 2 hours? Like, somebody should ask that question. And maybe the answer is we just picked a number. And maybe then with a little bit of education, you can explain to them, well, to get to an 80% charge, you might need more than that, right? And maybe we should have some rules in the building to enable people to actually, you know, charge their cars up properly. And by the way, if you limit them to that amount of time, I got news for you for the building, because if you were relying on a revenue share, now you're not going to be getting that, because guess where they're going to go to charge up for the remaining time that they need? Probably when they go to work.
Mm-hmm.
Instead, maybe they could have been charging up at your building, and maybe you could have been making a little bit more money from it if you had worked out some rules that kind of work for everybody. So,
right.
you know, you need rules with some teeth, right? Mm-hmm. You need to incentivize accountability instead of incentivizing unaccountability. People should be looking at their contracts. People should be doing their due diligence and doing their homework. I think what's going to happen is, you know, kind of brings us full circle to the money to fix broken chargers, right? But if we end up with the same problem again in a few years from now, and I think we're going to, because again, there's no metric and there's no, enforcement mechanism. I think the appetite of the public to throw a couple $100 million at it again, is not going to go anywhere good, right? And so it was an opportunity for federal funding to be used in a positive way, right? And they kind of did it. It sounds good when you tell people, 97%, 5 years. It sounds mm-hmm. great. But like
the actual
practical application of it makes me feel like we're going to be looking at the same problem in a couple years from now. And then, of course, people are going to say, well, the darn stuff. Like, there's so many ways that it could just be fixed. Like, if just people would just put their little thinking caps on, you know?
Right. And then it makes me, I mean, those are great examples to understand also that you might be sold that this is a value add to my real estate site, you know, or
right.
whatever it might be. And it might be convincing. It makes sense. Look at all these EVs on the road. Let me put in this infrastructure, this charging infrastructure, right. and trust whoever's selling it to me. But, you know, I've never dealt with this before. Maybe I'm well-versed in other ways of how I've used my real estate and this is my uh-huh. business, but this is so new that it seems like NEVI, you know, good effort, but how are we going to really hold up to those standards? Who's going to be enforcing right. them and how? And then right. also when it comes to liability, where does it fall? And do I have to be a lawyer
liability
to make sure that
a whole other conversation. That's a whole other conversation. Okay. Now, so typically in infrastructure contracts, you have all sorts of interesting things in there, right? You have things about like the length of time of the contract. You have things like who's responsible for upkeep and maintenance, mm-hmm. who is responsible for taxes, who is responsible for providing access, how much insurance you're supposed to have, who is liable right. for this, who is liable for that. Like, there's a lot of stuff that needs to go into those kinds of contracts. And you really need to be thinking about that. So like when I hear that there's a certain EV infrastructure company out there that is proud of their super easy, super simple, don't really need a lawyer to mark them up because they're so easy and so simple. Like, who doesn't want a super easy, super simple contract that doesn't need a lawyer? I mean, I'm a lawyer. I would know better, but let's say I wasn't, I would say, that sounds like a great idea, right?
Yeah.
Until you realize that like that super easy contract is actually missing a lot of things mm-hmm. that you would need if there's a problem. And so mm-hmm. if you have a problem and let's say the equipment always works because it basically always does, but then when it doesn't, now what do you do?
Yeah.
You don't really have any resources. Like, you have to call somebody. It goes back to that, you know, example of nobody showing up. Or the parts coming weeks later, or nobody picking up the phone, right? So like there's none of that stuff that's built in. So it's all well and good when everything is going great, but when it doesn't, then what do you do? So it mm-hmm. it's kind of like the best example that I can give to kind of like visualize this is insurance. Let's think like health insurance, for example, right? As long as you're perfectly healthy, why would you need health insurance? Like, who wants to spend the money? Like, well, I'm throwing out, you know, hundreds of dollars every month. I never get sick. So you feel like you're wasting your money until, God forbid, you get sick. And then what happens? Now you have your health insurance and it's covering your problem. Now let's do the mm-hmm. flip side of that. Let's just say you didn't want to spend any money on the health insurance because what do I need it for? I'm always healthy. Nothing ever goes wrong. Mm-hmm. By the way, I'm not a doom and gloom kind of person. Okay. I'm talking about like practical realities here. Right. And then you get sick and you don't have insurance. Okay, and then you have a bill of hundreds of thousands of dollars that you yeah. now need to come up with, and you don't have the money to pay for it, you have a problem, right? Mm-hmm. So it's, you know, people are, you know, I think have been making the mistake of thinking that this is super simple and easy. And on some level, it is, but in other ways, it's not. And like, you really, like, you've got to dive into, like, you know, what's in your contract. It all comes back to that. Like, what does it say about how mm-hmm. this is handled? Oh, it's silent on this. Well, you're going to have a problem, right? Like, unless you put something in there, or right. it says something about it, but there's no incentive to do the right thing. There's mm-hmm. no way to keep people accountable. There's no mm-hmm. enforcement mechanism. Then mm-hmm. it's kind of worthless. It's just verbiage.
Yeah. Right? Like how can I be, you know, if you don't get the support you need, like, how can I be compensated? Where does that fall? So it seems like before right. someone, a site host, is going to make this decision, which can be a great decision for someone, it can be a complete 100%. Value add and something amazing, but there are, of course, yeah, you have to make sure, how do I make money? And then also, what do I need? How am I going to do this? Will it actually be utilized? But then also, I have to know about, you know, the maintenance and kind of the mm-hmm. nature of EV charging as well, and hopefully trust the partner that's convincing me to use their hardware or use their services.
Trust but verify. It's called trust but verify. Like you trust them because mm-hmm. business is really all about relationships, right? That's one mm-hmm. of the things, you know, like I'm all about that, you know, business relationships and networking and everything else. But at the same time, like I want a piece of paper that clearly lays out what you're going to do and what I'm going to do. Like we shake on it. We have a good relationship. It's all good. It's great. But let's get something so that way, you know, what's expected of you. I know what's expected of me. And we all know what happens if somebody misbehaves, right? And doesn't do what they're supposed to do, right? And so then that way there are like no surprises. If you take any of the examples that I gave you, okay, and you flip them all on their head, think about like how wonderful this would be, right? Let's just say in the example of the EV charging company did not do their due diligence and didn't do the survey. They mm-hmm. did their due diligence. They did do their survey. They were able to enter into an easement agreement with the adjoining owner that made financial sense for all involved, and now everybody can come and use the infrastructure. Or if they didn't, they were able to go to the property across the street, okay? Assuming, again, they did all of their due diligence for the property across the street. Let's just assume that. That would be great. Then there would be nothing for anybody to write about on LinkedIn and to complain because it would be going great. Let's take the example of the hotel, all right? Let's say that they trained their staff. Let's say that they went to the infrastructure company and said, we want common parts. Let's say they went to the infrastructure company and said, we want a clause in the contract that says that if somebody calls this 800 number, your response time is going to be 2 hours, or you'll roll mm-hmm. a truck. I'm just making it up, but whatever it is, right? That's what that would be. And by the way, if you don't do that, hypothetically next month, I don't have to share any revenue with you. I don't know, or maybe you pay me for the lost revenue because you didn't come and fix the charger. And mm-hmm. because of the damage now being done to the reputation of the hotel, because your stuff looks like crap, okay? Mm-hmm. And our guests don't want to come here again, okay? So like, let's say all that stuff was built into the contract, and here's what happens mm-hmm. instead. The person has a problem. They go to the front desk. They say, okay, sure, no problem. I can help you with that. Give me a second. What's your name? What's your number? What parking spot are you in? Great. Mm-hmm. Hi. I call the 800 number. Yeah, we got a problem with the charger and blah, 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 blah. Okay, great. Just give me a minute. We're going to take a look and see if we can repair this, you know, remotely. You know, most of the problems we can fix remotely. Let's do that. Oh, it turns out that we can't do this remotely. Okay. You know what? Unfortunately, we got a repair truck there, you know, at another location right now. We're estimating they'll be there in about an hour or two from now, and you should be good. Okay. And if mm-hmm. it doesn't happen, you know what? I'll tell you what. We'll give this person a credit the next time that they come to charge up one of our spots. If it takes more than 2 hours, now you make everybody happy. What a great experience. This is fantastic. This is wonderful. Okay. And like, it's a whole other ball game, right?
It is.
And so like, you have like none of those horror stories. Or you take the thing mm-hmm. with the NEVI funding, right? And let's say now we put in a metric and you require the company to provide their data and their stats. And when they hit it consistently, you write them a check, okay? Mm-hmm. And now they didn't just put it anywhere, but they put it in a place where they know for a fact it will be utilized. They know for a fact it will be profitable. And they know if they have to fix it, they will earn their money back because it's going to be utilized appropriately. And by the way, on top of that, we're going to get a nice check from the government, okay?
Mm-hmm.
This would have been a completely different conversation. In fact, you and I wouldn't have had anything to talk about.
Right? What a shame.
Well, what a shame.
I mean, you called it the Wild West earlier, which is it really is interesting because it's a new frontier in a lot of ways.
Right.
But it seems to me that all of these, it's not like we haven't done business before. It's not like we haven't used real estate models like this. It's not like we haven't had new industries and emerging technologies. So why is this such a Wild West? Do you think it's just going to be learning and failing for who knows how long? Or do you think there's clearly this is turning in a certain direction and we will not be in the Wild West anymore, but we're going to be able to have maintained chargers in mm-hmm. the right locations with the right charging speeds and be able to have this be a thing of the past?
Right. So, you know, I saw this great quote and it was something about like, I'm probably misquoting it, but I'm paraphrasing it, is that like, you can't be a master at anything unless you're a fool first, right? So like the example that I'll give you is, let's say, like, I don't know, I'm not a golfer, but hypothetically, if I were to be a golfer, okay, I can guarantee you that the first out on a golf course, I would be abysmal. Okay. I can barely hit a ball at a driving range. Okay. But let's just use like somebody like Tiger Woods. Okay. One of the greatest golfers ever. Right. I'm imagining, besides his raw talent, right, probably the first time he went out there and picked up a golf club, whatever. Well, it was a little bit foolish. Like, he's a kid, he's going out there. Like, how good could he possibly be? Right. But he took that first step. Right. And I'm sure he made a ton of mistakes doing that. Right. I feel that way also in terms of, like, you know, what I've done, you know, professionally, and things that have happened, like, with me and with my life. Like, I've made all sorts of mistakes. I'm not perfect. Right. I'm frequently wrong, whatever, you know. You know, my wife will tell me that all the time, right? But, like, you know, we make mistakes, right? And sometimes you fail at things, right? But the most important thing is that if you're onto something and you know you're onto something really good, like, you learn from your mistakes and you pivot and you adjust and you keep going, right? Mm-hmm. And eventually, like, as we do this, and I think, and as we start to learn from our mistakes, you know, I really think we're going to get to the point where we will become masters at this, right? Look how far, like, Tiger Woods got, like, right? He's an amazing golfer, all right? But he did that because I'm sure he failed lots and he kept learning from his mistakes and he looked at the things that he did wrong and said, okay, I did that wrong. Let me not do that again. Or the next time this situation happens, I'm going to approach it a little bit differently. I think we started this whole thing out, you know, when I was talking about the parallels, you know, to the wireless infrastructure business and how we're doing this right now. Like, at the beginning, like, there were a lot of mistakes were made, right? Mm-hmm. Service was pretty crappy. You had trouble when you were transitioning from one network to the next. Mm-hmm. If you wanted to, use your phone on one network and go to the other one, it was a royal pain in the butt, like, to switch carriers. In fact, Definitely. They used to charge you if you would want to do that. And then they had legislation they put in, they're not allowed to do that anymore, right? They allowed you to then port your numbers. Your phone calls can now be used on literally any network anywhere. Now, even for most of us, when we travel around the world, you pick up a signal. You might roam, but you pick up a signal and you can make your phone calls and you get your data and do your video and do all the stuff that you want to do, right? That market, like, really matured, okay? At the beginning, like, cell phone companies were offering, like, a line of service or a free cell phone, you know, to people, sometimes even in lieu of rent. If you think about it now, it's, like, absurd. Like, what landlord would take a cell phone as opposed to getting a rent check from, you know, a wireless company? Like, nobody would do that, right?
No.
Or let's say an advertising company who's putting up a billboard and not paying rent for it, right? By the way, you know, some people used to use the model. Hey, we'll put up the advertising. People will come here. They'll come to your business, right? Mm-hmm. But then people got a little smarter about that and said, well, you're using a piece of my real estate, right?
Like, right.
Every inch is valuable to me as a real estate person. No, I'm not going to let you put it there without paying me rent. Mm-hmm. You can think of the example of the company that does not pay rent and where everybody gives them free advertising. That's still kind of working a little bit, but there's been some pushback on that. And so I think, like, what's starting to happen over time is that the marketplace is going to mature. I think there's a huge gap in terms of education, right? Mm-hmm. People just don't understand stuff, okay?
Yeah.
A huge part of what I am doing and what we're doing here today is, like, I'm trying to help people understand this. I'm really hoping I gave some, like, really good examples, but that's the way in which I do what I do, right? It's it's not so much like, cross this ad here, put that comma here, you got to insert that word there. Like, yeah, of course, there's part of that as a lawyer, 100%, right? But, like, you gotta look at the whole picture, right? And you have to approach this from all those different directions. And I think, you know, have an innate understanding of, like, how all this stuff works. And so I think what's going to happen over time is that the public will get better educated. The products are going to improve because the products that are out there that suck are going to die. Okay. Yes. The ones that are really good are going to thrive. And by the way, that's exactly what happened in the wireless business. The not so good companies got gobbled up by the better companies. Okay. To the point now where that market's, like, really mature and it works, but, like, it took a lot of time. It took 25, 30 years, maybe more. How long? Right. Right. I think the first cell phone call was made, like, in the 1980s with, like, you know, a brick, you know, a phone like the size of, like, a suitcase, Yeah.
Right.
Like I even remember my dad had a cell phone in his car, and like, yeah, he had the phone on the cradle sitting in the front of the car, which was, you know, like yay big, but then he had all this equipment in the trunk. it was a thing. Right. But, and now your phone is like, you know, this little thing, that's all it is. Right. So I think over time, what's going to happen is that like the technology is going to improve because the marketplace is going to demand it. Mm-hmm. The public will get more mature and better educated. I think if we learn from some of our mistakes and we approach this the right way, the infrastructure will improve. Okay. And I think little by little, we're going to get to the point where we'll probably have completely different topics to talk about, you know, in a year or two from now than we do. I mean, I'm hoping that you and I will not be like waxing poetic on all the problems that we still have. We might still, right. But I'm really hopeful that we won't and that the situation is really going to improve.
I have to be hopeful too, because not only is there so much federal funding behind this and everything, and then the states are now involved. And of course the charge point operators that are having to make a business model that can survive out of this, but also there's more EV drivers on the road, and Tesla does it really well. And Europe does it really well. It's not like there's not models that we can't run with, but it does seem like, emulate. Oh my goodness. Yeah, exactly. There's a lot to emulate. Sure. Take the lessons we've learned that I'm not sure why we had to learn those lessons over and over again. And so dramatically so when there are other examples, but there are examples that shine that we can do this.
And so let's follow them.
Exactly. Let's follow them and learn from them and try to like be informative. Like if you're going to be a site host, it's not all dreary. You know, you can really have a successful value add, but there to be understanding of the state of things right now is good. So you can set yourself up for success, whether it's getting an attorney that can interpret it all for you, or listening to a podcast that lists all the things that you should be considering and making sure that you at least, you know, start with some sort of foundation of knowledge before you decide to make an investment or a partnership, whatever it is like this, and put your business on the line. I think there's good research to do and there's good companies out there, and it's important for the companies as well to understand that they're part of the educational informational process as well, and to see basically all the pressure that's put on this industry, because it shouldn't take someone showing up to a charger somewhere who has, you know, tens of thousands of followers on Twitter to get attention to that charger. It should be a priority if it's critical infrastructure. And so I think your perspective of seeing it from all sides and seeing different examples of where due diligence is, it seems like, of course you should have done it, or how successful it is when you do it, and how to kind of just interpret as well that because it's such a new industry, even though there's a lot to take from and learn from, that there are things that are still missing that we need to be conscientious of along the way. So I really love your experience. I mean, it's
thank you.
And all the different examples, I think it's really important to highlight those, because it's a complicated industry that we need to see be critical infrastructure that works.
And so that's, you know, that's also one of those things too, is that, you know, relying on federal funding as your business model is not a business model.
No.
Right. By the way, it's great and I'm not knocking it and it helps a lot. Okay. Yeah. But like, you also have to like understand, well, what's going to happen if my profit margin is only there with that additional money, and maybe this is not the business that I should be thinking about long term. And by the way, then that also affects how you run your business, because you're not in it for the, you know what I mean? You're not in it for the long game. And so you make, you know, decisions that yes, in the short term might work out okay, but like for the long game, it's not going to be good. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So, you know, that's one of the things also I try to encourage clients. It's like, it's great. It's terrific. Like, get the benefits, get the tax incentives, get all that stuff. But like, you also need to be thinking about this, like, how would this all work if that stuff were to suddenly disappear?
Mm-hmm. Exactly. I think that'll be extremely, I mean, I use the word interesting a lot, but it'll be cool to see what strategies stand up, because like you said, take advantage of the incentives while they're here. Think ahead though. Or else
think ahead.
We don't want
by the way, the companies that can figure out how to do this and how to profit from this,
and
how to provide a service and a product to the public that the public wants and is willing to pay for, and you can do it profitably without that, those will be the companies that at the end of the day, they're all going to thrive. And the ones that were completely reliant on the extra money are probably not going to make it, unless, you know, of course, the spigot for the money never ends, right? But if it ever does, what's going to happen is that the market will just do what it always does, right? Mm-hmm. And the companies that are best at this will succeed, and the companies that are not are just going to get gobbled up or they'll disappear.
Mm-hmm. Completely so. I completely agree. The free market, when that really comes into the EV charging infrastructure, will really tell the story of what succeeds and what doesn't. But I think it's clear if we keep subsidizing it, it hasn't really worked so far. We have chargers in the ground, but there's a lot to improve on. Of course, we're getting, you know, a little catalyst there, but we can't rely on it. So I think that's pretty clear. And we'll have to keep an eye on how they continue to stand, how the funding goes down, because it's also a contentious topic of federal funding. And I don't want that to be the thing that's dividing people on EVs, because it's like, no, this can just be
telecommunications. This can be completely avoided, right? Without even going there. Completely avoided without even going there. Yeah.
So with your work, of course, you know, EV infrastructure attorney, you have a lot of interesting stories, interesting experience, and you do recommend that this could be a great add-on for someone. Just do your due diligence. Make sure you have the right partner and get it checked out, right? Not saying don't do it.
No, 100%. Like, you know, it goes back to what I said before. Like, it's really critical. Like, do your homework, right? Mm-hmm. And you also have to recognize what you know, what you don't know. And when you know that when you're willing to admit that you don't know something, which, by the way, that's a whole thing in and of itself, to actually admit you don't know something. But if you know somebody who does know about the topic, well, then get those people involved, right? That's why like, you need to, you're 100% right. Like, anybody that's diving into this really needs to partner up with the right businesses, the right people, the right kind of consultants, the right kind of attorney, the right kind of infrastructure company. Like, you know, you got to go beyond the sales pitch, right? Mm-hmm. And you really need to partner up with people that kind of like help you get through this, right? And not everybody knows how to do this, you know? Somebody literally just came to me the other day and said to me, I know what I know, I know what I don't know, and I don't know anything about this topic, and you seem to know it. So let's talk. Okay. And so that, like, that's like a super mature approach, like to business, right? Mm-hmm. Like, somebody actually understands. It's like, I don't have all the answers, but there are people that do. And then if I can partner up with those people, I'm going to be successful at whatever it is that I'm doing. Right.
Yes.
It literally becomes like a partnership. Like, we help you succeed, right? You help us succeed, because by helping you out, we learn more. And by the way, the next client that comes along gets the benefit of all the stuff that we've now learned by working with you, right? And vice versa. And the next time you're thinking of doing this, now you know a little bit more, you know, you understand, you know, this business and this market a little bit better. So that's absolutely critical. Like, you got to partner up with the right people and to be willing to recognize, like, when it's time to ask for help.
And
a lot of people have trouble with that, Francie. A lot of people don't like to ask for help, and and sometimes they don't want to pay for it either, right?
And then they make expensive
mistakes. Yes, they get themselves into a lot of trouble.
Totally. Yeah. I mean, it makes me think that if you're have the agency at that level to create the incentives or the penalties to make the agreement that will work out for you, that then perhaps your provider or your partner can learn from that and take it even higher and higher and keep kind of building that up the chain. So I think along every level, there's something to learn and then to push forward to make sure that we're doing this so we're not just installing what is essentially already obsolete hardware that is extremely expensive. And, you know, like you, I think on our conversation that we had before, is no charger better than a broken charger? And I would say, it might be.
Yeah. It depends. Exactly. The answer very well might be yes. But it's going to be, it depends. It's going to be, it depends on the whatever. But yes, the answer in a vacuum actually might be yes. But in some places, it might be no, because maybe this is a perfect place for it. And if they would just fix it. Right. Now it makes sense. Right. Yes.
Exactly. Yeah. I think we know we do have listeners that I hope this was helpful for that have thought about being site hosts. And, you know, not only, of course, you're considering all the hardware you're going to use, but all of the intricacies of that agreement and actually putting this infrastructure on to your land, what it would mean for you and all the work ahead of time, and just kind of, yeah, learn from other people's mistakes or learn lessons that others have already learned and be able to incorporate that into your decision-making process, I think is very valuable. And I think everyone could learn from this kind of conversation in your experience as well, and seeing it change over time and seeing how, yeah, it's you have to decipher a little bit and kind of fend for yourself a bit. But hopefully in time, it will change to really be able to uphold the responsibilities of each party as necessary so that we can have critical infrastructure that works, which is an insane status quo to have.
Right. I think that would be insane. Yeah, exactly. Like we said earlier, like if it all worked, it'd be awesome.
Exactly. Thank you so much. I know that you are a busy man, helping people everywhere, reading a lot of documents. I can't imagine. And I really appreciate you being willing to connect on this and tell me all about it and share your lessons learned, because they're very valuable. And yeah, this is your time and energy. I appreciate it. Thank you, Jason.
Thank you. No, this has been great. This has been a ton of fun. I've really enjoyed it, every minute of it.
Oh, good. We're going to have to keep in touch to see if you come across anything really interesting in the future that you...
Oh, guaranteed. There's going to be something. You know that, Francie. There's going to be something.
You have a really interesting lens through which you're watching this all happen. So I think you're getting great insight, and more than most too. So thank you so much for sharing it with us. I really appreciate it. And hopefully our audience, if you have any questions, of course, let us know in the comments. What discussions has this sparked with you? Have you considered being a site host? Did you know all that you should consider? Would love to hear it. And again, yes, thank you, Jason. Thank you everyone for plugging into the Out of Spec podcast today. We'll see you next time on the next episode. Hope you have a wonderful rest of your day and you feel a little bit more legally educated. Bye-bye.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Travel is great, but planning for travel can be time-consuming and difficult. That's where One Travel comes in. With One Travel, you'll find everything you need to book the perfect trip. Flights, hotels, cars, transportation, it's all right there. With One Travel, you can book online, via app, or even pick up the phone and talk to a travel advisor ready to help you make your selections. Visit onetravel.com/music or call 855-437-2154. Plan it, book it, live it. One Travel.